Live from Utrecht, this is the Van Weerdum Shorzenedo.
Hello.
Oh my god, who's there?
A burglar.
We have another Van Weerdum Shorzenedo with extra Samson today.
That's right.
Ruben, welcome. Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back.
Guys, first of all, congratulations. As of yesterday, we are the number one in the world of most new corona cases. Well done.
Even better than the White House?
Yes, we're number one.
Oh, that's amazing.
Does anyone want to thank their parents, Ruben?
I just hope my parents will be safe in these trying times.
Short, I know you're happy with this.
No, I mean, I could say I told you so, but that's...
Yeah, you kind of did, didn't we? Like last week, that was basically... Who could have predicted this, right?
I don't know.
I guess George could have. Okay, let's talk. Let's talk Bitcoin. Oh, do you want to add something about Corona, George?
No, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens, guys. I forgot to mention something.
Oh my god!
I have amazing news.
Tell me.
Actually, George, you already know the news.
I don't.
Ruben,
what's the news?
The Van Weerdum Shorzenedo has its own feed now.
Wow!
Its own RSS feed, and it showed up in my podcast app.
Excellent.
So I'm now subscribed to the Van Weerdum Shorzenedo. If you're listening and if you want to hear for all our episodes, then you can subscribe to the Van Weerdum Shorzenedo.
I'll be subscribing for sure. It's actually exactly what I was asking you guys for, like what I was missing. I just wanted to be able to subscribe to your podcast specifically. So great.
That's two subscribers already, Shorz. Me and Ruben.
That's excellent.
We're on the roll.
I was already subscribed. So another related
news. It's free.
Another related news is that we have had our first Swapcast.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Because right. We actually featured on the
Unhashed. That's
the Unhashed podcast.
That's right. Yeah. So sometimes we're getting technical issues or whatever and unable to record. And then what we do is we look at other podcasts or something where maybe I appear or one of the other guys and we broadcast that. So in this case, I came onto your show. So I asked you guys, maybe we can put that on the Unhashed podcast. So our Unhashed podcast listeners were also able to listen to the last episode and probably, you know, if, I don't know, a couple of weeks from now we run into issues again, maybe I'll be asking you to air this episode. So maybe
amazing.
It'll be number two.
Yeah,
as well.
And if you need an extra motivation to check that out, we actually re-edited the audio, so it's going to be a little bit better than the original.
That's correct.
Check it out.
Yeah.
All right, I wanted to mention that. Let's talk Bitcoin, Ruben. We're going to discuss another of your proposals.
That's right.
It's your sidechain proposal, which I'm sure has a very compelling name, which I'm forgetting right now.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of tricky because the word sidechain is very overloaded. So I'm not entirely certain whether or not I should be calling it a sidechain.
Right.
So generally speaking, these days I call it a blind merge mine chain.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually is kind of a combination of two mechanisms. So one is blind merge mining, which is some kind of process where you somehow create another blockchain via Bitcoin. And the second one is called the perpetual one-way peg, which is kind of a method of creating a token on the chain without having some kind of speculation aspect where there's going to be a pump and dump, some kind of shitcoin, avoiding all of that.
Yeah. And I say, first of all, the reason why you're probably not super comfortable calling it a sidechain is because the idea behind the sidechain is essentially that you move Bitcoins or coins or something packed to Bitcoins from Bitcoin to an alternative chain where alternative rules apply, and then you can move it back to the Bitcoin blockchain.
That's right.
And that last step, that's actually not possible in your proposal.
That last step is not entirely possible. There is some hope that maybe the token that's on there is not going to be too far from being worth one Bitcoin, so you can trade it back and forth, but that is not guaranteed at all.
Yeah, that's the theory, which we'll get into in a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not quite a sidechain, but it has some similar properties. Most obviously, this alternative chain can have alternative rules.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin has all sorts of rules, like a block is found once every 10 minutes and all of the other rules. And then with this merge mine chain, this alternative chain, you can have other rules. For example, you can have more privacy, or you can have more smart contracting types of capabilities, or
DeFi.
What are some other nifty benefits you see in a chain like this?
You can even have the same rules, but it's just going to be cheaper because you do a bunch of transactions on the sidechain and then occasionally you make a block and
cheaper
that's represented as just one transaction on the Bitcoin side.
Yeah.
So yeah, cheaper transactions. That's an option. What are other benefits you foresee for something like this? Let's start with that.
So, I mean, this is, I guess it goes into kind of the use cases. So I would say that this kind of chain, so it can be literally any chain, right? So everything that altcoins are doing can kind of be done on these blind merge mine chains, except the one difference here is that it's not going to be a store of value. If you want store of value, you got to use Bitcoin. But anything else, anything that's not storing value, you can do with these chains. And then the question kind of becomes, well, what non-store of value use cases are there for other chains? And a couple of things that come to mind, mainly colored coins. So that would be the main use case, I think. Any person who wants to create some kind of token, use the Tether, for instance, can issue these on a separate chain. And that is preferable to issuing them on top of the Bitcoin blockchain, because on the Bitcoin blockchain, presumably fees are going to be high. You're going to have to compete for block space. But here you have your kind of your separate chain with your separate block space. So it's sort of scalable in that sense.
Could you have like a different monetary policy on a chain like this?
Well, the idea is generally that you don't really have a token that is being issued on this chain. So if you want some monetary policy on there, you kind of have to issue a token on there. And if you issue a token on there, you're going to reintroduce speculation. So I would say that's kind of a separate thing.
Okay.
So no, not really.
Okay. So let's get into how it works.
Yeah, especially, so I guess we want to start with blind merge mining.
Yeah, there's two aspects of it.
Yeah.
One, you just mentioned this, one of them is blind merge mining, the other is proof of burn.
Perpetual one-way PAG.
Right, okay. So yeah, merge mining first.
Yes, yeah. So I guess very, very broadly, there are multiple ways of doing blind merge mining. And one we're going to be talking about here is kind of a fee bidding method of doing blind merge mining. So
what is merged mining at all, or blind or not?
The original merge mining concept is kind of to ask Bitcoin miners to add a hash off some other blockchain while they're hashing Bitcoin's proof of work. The word blind kind of adds to it that you don't really need the miners to figure out which blocks to add, because the original method of regular merge mining, the issue was that the miners wouldn't be just checking Bitcoin, they would be checking all these other coins as well. And there were some concerns with that you're maybe overloading miners with too much work, making it more expensive to become a Bitcoin miner. So the blind part is kind of important in the sense that it allows anyone to create a block, not just miners. And miners still have to mine it, but through some mechanism, you're kind of compensating them for that.
Yeah, and to be clear, when you mean block here, you mean a block on this alternative chain, on this chain. Yeah. So like any blockchain, it consists of blocks, and these blocks are hashed.
Yeah.
And each hash, so each block, is then included in the Bitcoin blockchain.
Yeah.
And users of this merged mine sidechain, they actually check the Bitcoin blockchain to figure out what their own blockchain is, in a way. I'm calling it their own. It's, you know, they're probably also Bitcoin users, or but you know, they're using the Bitcoin blockchain to figure out what the sidechain looks, the merged mine chain looks like.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So
concretely, if you're using transactions in this example, as a sidechain user, you're checking the Bitcoin blockchain and you're looking for a specific kind of transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And in that specific kind of transaction, you see a hash, and then you take a note of that hash, and then you start syncing your sidechain blockchain. And as soon as you see that hash that you were expecting, you're like, okay, this is a valid sidechain block. If you see a different hash, you just ignore it.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, you're skipping ahead a bit now, Shores, because that
I like to.
Yes, well,
it's good.
But it was a good explanation. Yeah. Like, that's basically how you construct the blockchain. Okay, so where is this hash included then in the Bitcoin blockchain?
Right. So the mechanism I came up with is kind of an alternative proposal to what Paul Storz proposed. He had an idea to do blind merge mining, which related to his drive chains idea, which was basically a soft fork that would designate a space in Bitcoin's Coinbase to put a hash, and then anyone could kind of pay Bitcoins to miners to add their specific hash to that Coinbase transaction. The downside to this proposal was that it would require a soft fork. It was very specific to drive chains. It was not really a general method. And the method that I came up with...
Yeah, hang on. So in drive chain, this hash that we discussed that forms the merge mine sidechain, that is included in the Coinbase transaction,
mm-hmm.
which is the transaction that a miner includes in his block to pay himself the block subsidy and the fees.
That's right.
So it's included in that hash. That's what Paul Storz suggested.
That's right.
And you have a different idea.
Yes. So my,
it still uses a hash, but it's included somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah. So my method kind of generalizes that to something that is doable without a specific soft fork. It still requires a soft fork, but now we're using sighash anyprev out. Just as an FYI, opctv can also be used for this. So either one of those proposals, if it makes it into Bitcoin as a soft fork, it enables what I'm about to talk about.
Yes. And prev out, opsig anyprev out, we have discussed in episode. Not yet. Coming soon, maybe.
Oh, that.
But did discuss CTV, or did we?
No, we've mentioned it.
Oh, okay.
In passing, okay.
All right.
So, okay.
Also yeah. Future episode.
So I think it's fine to kind of keep that aspect about it high level, because it's not integral to the idea. It's just what you got to know is that we create this string of transactions, one transaction after the other. With one input, one output, you're just moving a single Satoshi over every time. We use a relative time lock of one block, meaning that only one transaction per block gets into the Bitcoin blockchain. And we use that as a framework for other people to attach a hash to. So what anyone can do is take one of these transactions, add their own input and output, and with that, include a hash of a block they want to mine. And through replace by fee, RBF, people can actually outbid each other for the privilege of being the one to add their secondary input and output and add that hash. And so what we've created is a kind of a fee bidding mechanism that kind of exploits or utilizes RBF to allow anyone to include their hash and therefore create a block on this other chain.
Right. So what we have here is we've created at the point where we're basically launching this chain, we create a whole series of transactions that all refer to the previous one, yep. Right? And all of these are unconfirmed. They're broadcast somehow,
yeah,
but they cannot be
know them. Yeah.
They cannot be included in the blockchain yet because of the time lock. Yes. Yeah, am I saying that right?
Well, only one. It's a relative time lock of one block, meaning they can be included one at a time.
Right.
And their fee is also zero. So somebody has to add an input and output and pay some kind of fee in order to have it appear in the blockchain.
Right. So if we do this before we launch the sidechain or at the point where we launch the sidechain, then how many of these transactions do we create at that point in time?
Yeah, so there it is. You can create an unlimited amount of transactions, but everybody has to be aware of these transactions and know them. So it is some kind of like upfront cost. I don't know exactly what it comes down to, but you could just create 100 years worth of these transactions and ensure that the blockchain will live for 100 years. And then somewhere before those 100 years, you would have to have a hard fork in order to extend the chain beyond that. So it puts a limit on there, but it's not really something that's practically going to be an issue.
And so right. This is where the magic of sighash anyprev out comes in, right? Because you're saying you've pre-generated all these transactions.
Yeah.
And so the astute listener would say, well, they all have a hash. So how can I change anything in that long chain? Because I would break the chain.
Right.
Well, you can do that because sighash anyprev out allows you to not refer to a specific transaction ID, but instead refer to a specific output script. And so you can start adding inputs to that transaction and outputs to the transaction as long as that one specific output script is still there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah, so to put it in layman's terms, usually a transaction refers to the previous transaction basically as a whole. Through this soft fork, you can have a transaction that refers to a small part of a previous transaction, and thereby you can change that previous transaction in certain ways. You can add stuff to it.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks to sighash anyprev out, it's kind of possible to do something like this.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned this, so sorry for asking again, but sure. Does this require anyprev out, or would it just improve it? Because it sounds like it would really require it.
So either you have sighash anyprev out or you use opctv.
Okay, one of both. One of the two you really need.
And there is a third method that Shores kind of challenged me on, so I have to rethink that, but I think it's still possible, which is...
He challenged you on that before we started recording, to be clear.
That's right, okay. Yeah. But I think it's still possible, where you basically just create all these transactions ahead of time with a secret key, and then the person who creates it throws away the key afterwards, ensuring that these transactions can only be spent in one way. You will need a kind of a different mechanism to include the hash, because you no longer want to be able to change the transactions. So you would have to have like a second output, and then somebody should spend that second output to add the hash to it. So it would be possible. But the downside of that is it's kind of a trusted setup, right? Because there's somebody who has a key that they created all these transactions with. You hope that he threw away the key, but you're not certain whether or not he did. Although the downside is not that severe. So actually, I'm not that opposed to trying it out before I get one of these soft forks. Because the worst thing that can happen is that the chain just halts because some unexpected transaction happens. And then it requires some kind of hard fork to get it started again, but nobody loses any value. So it's not terrible.
Okay,
let's assume any prev out for now.
Yeah.
So we've got this chain of transactions. They're unconfirmed for now, and they're confirmed one block at a time. And this means a new block is found. But there is some sort of bidding process going on with RBF.
That's right.
Which the reason someone would be willing to outbid someone else with a block is because that block would pay him more in the new coins that are on the sidechain, which are in turn mining fees that users of this alternative chain are paying to have their transactions included in this alternative chain.
Yeah,
right.
That's right. So it is very similar to how Bitcoin works. And obviously that's not a coincidence because it's really kind of emulating proof of work here. So the fees on, just like in Bitcoin, all the fees go to miners, and that's what incentivizes miners to actually go and do all this hashing and create a block. Here, the miners, the Blind Merge Mine miners, they take the fees from this Blind Merge Mine chain and they utilize that to put in the hash in the Bitcoin blockchain, and they pay roughly the equivalent of whatever they're being paid in these fees to the Bitcoin miners. So what it does, and that's kind of important to note, is that essentially we're outsourcing the mining of this other chain to the Bitcoin miners because we're paying Bitcoin fees, and these Bitcoin fees, Bitcoin miners will be competing over those Bitcoin fees through proof of work. So indirectly, it's still proof of work, but we're utilizing Bitcoin as a kind of step in between.
Right. I'm thinking of 51% attacks. Like, could this system be 51% attacks in some way? Like, say you're willing to pay more fees in a competing block in the next Bitcoin block, or does the sidechain have these rules? I'm just calling it a sidechain.
Sure.
Does this sidechain have a sort of rule that it can't be 51% attacks compared to like the Bitcoin blockchain? Because that's how it would benefit from the Bitcoin security, right? I guess.
Yeah. So I think it's always kind of a spurious claim to say that you're getting security from the Bitcoin blockchain, but there does seem to be, to some degree, that does seem to be happening. So just like to be very like clear and practical about this, there is a way. Like the difference with proof of work mining is that it's not a process where randomly a winner is selected. It's a process where whoever pays the most gets to create the block. So if you want to stop this chain, you could literally do so by just paying higher fees and creating a block that just contains nothing, or even just an invalid block that's fine too, that would just be ignored. But in doing so, what's interesting is that the fees will start to accumulate on the sidechain, let's call it sidechain. And so this kind of creates fee pressure where for the next block, if you want to keep censoring it, you got to pay even more. For the next block, you got to pay even more. So there is this kind of like pressure where at the end of the day, it becomes quite similar to what Bitcoin does.
Right. So, but that's a censorship 51% attack.
Yes.
What about double spend 51% attack? I'm guessing that...
So like a reorg or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that wouldn't be possible without actually reorging the Bitcoin blockchain.
So it is possible, but it would be a slow process. So that's kind of interesting. So let's say you want to just do a two block reorg off the sidechain. So what happens is that you have to put a block that is kind of like has a lower block height. You have to put that into the Bitcoin blockchain, right? The hash of that block. So what that means is for the longest chain on the sidechain, and there's no block basically occurring, right? Because there's not its older block. It's not the longest chain. So nothing happens for 10 minutes. There's no new block. And then another block gets created. And now that shorter chain becomes the longer chain.
Right.
So basically the longest chain halts while you're reorging the chain. And that's very unique to this proposal.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, that actually kind of ends up being a security benefit because it means that if you're 100 blocks into the future, you know it's going to literally take 1,000 minutes at least to reorg those blocks.
Well, but you can't do anything in those 1,000 minutes except make a phone call.
Yeah, so the chain halts during that time, but that is also when the sidechain fees start to rise because people can't get their transactions in, which makes it even more difficult for that reorg to occur. Yeah, there is an interesting mechanism there that seems to work out pretty well, but I do think it requires more deep thought and maybe just some experimentation to kind of see how it works out in practice.
I guess another way to look at it is that if you want to annoy this sidechain,
yeah,
we call it that way, we can edit it in post production. There's only one Bitcoin block or one Bitcoin transaction available every Bitcoin block where you can decide the next sidechain block.
Yeah.
And so you can DOS that particular Bitcoin transaction for every sidechain block. And you can DOS it in different ways, right? You can create empty blocks on the main chain for the sidechain, or you can fork off a very old sidechain block, or you can just put complete garbage in it.
Yeah, yeah, all three are possible.
Yeah, but as long as the fees on the sidechain represent some real value, they'll accumulate and eventually it'll get expensive for you to do this.
That's right, yeah.
But perhaps not prohibitively.
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, but you know, it is kind of similar to how in Bitcoin you could like 51% attack and create these bogus blocks all the time. But you know, in Bitcoin, it's like obvious, like very obvious how expensive that is. And here, especially when you think about like a low value sidechain, like it's maybe not as obvious whether or not that's going to work out. And that's definitely a thing, right? Because with Bitcoin, we also have the benefit of having a block reward where every new block creates a new Bitcoins and that also moves things forward. And that's going to be different in this chain where we don't actually introduce a new coin, a new token. There are no coins being generated. So really everything has to come from fees. And that's not going to be exactly the same as Bitcoin.
There's no subsidy.
There's no subsidy.
Okay, so that's the merged mine part.
Yes.
I think that's pretty clear to me. Is it to you, Shors?
Almost, but I have one more advanced question.
Mm.
What is in this scaffold of transactions that we're talking about? Because like we said, we pre-generate a whole series of transactions for the next 10 years.
Right.
And they each have one input and one output.
Yeah.
And those will stay the same forever, but we can add inputs and outputs later to commit to blocks, etc.
Yeah.
What is in these initial inputs and outputs, and why can't I shuffle them around and do mean things with them?
Right. So this is actually a covenant. So a covenant is basically an enforcement of how an output is going to be spent.
But Bitcoin doesn't have covenants.
Bitcoin doesn't have covenants yet. But with any prev out, actually, we'll be kind of incidentally introducing the equivalent to the OpsCTV covenant, which is something that Jeremy Rubin has been working on. And essentially what it is this is, with OpsCTV, I guess it's easier to explain. It's basically a hash in the output that determines what the next transaction is that is allowed to spend that output. And what we do here is, instead of the hash, we actually put the signature in the output ahead of time. So normally what you have is you have a pub key or a pub key hash, and then when you spend it, you create the signature for that pub key hash. And what we do here is we actually have in the output the pub key hash plus the signature, and it's all there already. So it's already predetermined how it's going to be spent. But this is only possible with SIGHASH any prev out, because the signature kind of refers back to the transaction itself, and that will be kind of a circular reference. So with any prev out, because you don't have to sign the transaction itself, the transaction that you're spending, or at least not the TXID, you don't have that issue. So it becomes possible to do a covenant like that.
So the signature in transaction one refers to transaction two.
Yeah.
And the signature in transaction two refers to transaction three, because the signature is in the output now.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. This is quite mind-boggling.
That's right. Yeah. It is a little. It's a little bit of a hack, and I guess we're gonna have to wait and see kind of what the final version of any prev out becomes. But it seems like this will be possible. It is less efficient than OpsCTV, because with OpsCTV it's literally a hash, and here it's a signature. So signature is kind of double the data roughly, and you need to do a signature check. Just one little side note that's kind of funny is that the signature doesn't need to be secure, in the sense that it doesn't really matter what the private key is. So the most efficient way of doing it is actually using the generator G as the pub key that you're signing the signature with. And it doesn't matter, because you're already committed to what transaction you're signing. So the fact that it's G and everybody knows it is kind of irrelevant.
But doesn't something have to increment? Because otherwise all these transactions would be identical and I could still swap them out. Or is the recursion creating different hashes all the time?
The recursion should be creating different hashes all the time. Yeah.
So
okay.
So I didn't get any of that. But I think we can move on anyways, right? Like the smart listeners maybe got something out of that. The dumber ones, we still get the gist. I get the gist. I think that's good enough.
That's the important part. I agree.
Okay.
All right. So then the other part is burning.
That's right.
Getting coins from the main chain, essentially, to the side chain.
Yeah. Because what we've described so far is just basically an altcoin that happens to be mined instead of like with proof of work or proof of stake or whatever nonsense you want to think of, that happens to be mined through this kind of blind merge mining process. But we don't want to create an altcoin. We want some kind of chain that is useful for Bitcoin without creating the secondary token that's going to be speculative, that people are going to pump and dump on, because that's what always happens if you create a token. Even if your intentions are good, it doesn't matter.
But so, then how do we get rich, Ruben?
How do we get rich? Well, indirectly, you get rich because if this sidechain is popular, the idea is we have a method called the perpetual one-way peg, where people burn their Bitcoins, they destroy their Bitcoins.
That sounds like the opposite of getting rich.
It is getting rich because everybody who doesn't burn their Bitcoins, their token gets more scarce. If you go from 21 million to 20 right. million.
We're luring people into this sidechain.
Maybe,
so
and maybe.
We keep our coins.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, anyone who doesn't move into this, but that's the interesting part. Like indirectly, you're benefiting from this activity as a Bitcoiner. And that's actually where all the speculative value goes. Well, it's not really speculative value, but all the value, I would say.
Because you set the maximum value of whatever's on that chain with this mechanism.
Yeah.
Would be, you know, one-on-one.
That's right, because you can always burn a Bitcoin and receive a sidechain token through this mechanism.
Yeah.
So it will never be worth more than one Bitcoin.
But I'm more worried about minimum value.
Hang on. Because I interrupted you
sure.
in the middle of your actual explanation. Let's get back to the actual explanation.
Well, I already forgot what I was
You want to get about. Coins from the main chain to the sidechain.
Yes.
So you got to burn coins on Bitcoin. How do you burn coins on Bitcoin, first of all?
Please don't burn Bitcoins.
So that's the funny thing, right? Like, I think it's fine to burn Bitcoins, but I think everybody's intuition is it's a terrible thing to burn Bitcoin. So we'll definitely have to get back to that. But yeah.
To be perfectly clear for those who don't know this, burning Bitcoin just means you make them unspendable.
Yeah.
Right?
You destroy them, I would say.
You destroy,
like not even unspendable. It's just, they're gone.
And so how do you do that?
There are two ways to utterly destroy Bitcoin. I mean, you can destroy
three
it.
Ways, actually.
You can destroy it in a way that it's obvious to people, and you can destroy it in a way that's provable to nodes.
It's both obvious, right?
So obvious to people means you're sending it to an address called 1 Van Weerdem, which you know for sure does not have a private key. So it's obvious to humans that this stuff is worthless, but a node has no way to know, so it keeps track of it anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other way is what you're proposing, right, Ruben? So explain that.
Yeah. So the other way would be via opReturn. So opReturn is an opcode that is generally used to kind of add data to the Bitcoin blockchain, but it can also be used to, if you create an opReturn output and you put your Bitcoins in there, your Bitcoins are gone. They're not going to go to the UTXO sats. Nobody's going to look at them again. And for that reason, actually, like the UTXO sat is not like the number of coins that were minted up until now. It's a lower number because we already had a bunch of coins burned through opReturn.
Yeah. Okay. So you're sending coins to this opReturn address.
Yes.
This opReturn address that includes a bunch of data, and this data specifies which address on the sidechain should get the coins, and you should have the private key of this address on the sidechain. And then everyone who's running the sidechain software notices this opReturn on the Bitcoin blockchain and then attributes this newly generated sidechain coins to this address. And that's how you move coins from Bitcoin to the sidechain, correct?
Yes, but I think there's actually a simpler way of doing it. So that would definitely be one way of doing it. But I think the way that I would like to go with is to have the people who are creating these sidechains, the blocks on the Bitcoin blockchain, have them destroy the tokens. And that means that in the Coinbase transaction on the sidechain, they can claim whatever tokens they burned. And I think that's going to be the easiest mechanism. And then they can choose for themselves what kind of key to use on the sidechain, because they're the ones who are creating the block.
But that means there can only be one new user of the sidechain per 10 minutes?
So the thing you're forgetting is that this is entering the block. This is putting coins into the blockchain, into the sidechain. But that doesn't mean that that's the limit of the number of users, right? Because you can use atomic swaps to swap back and forth between the chain. So you really only need one person to kind of add more coins when there are not enough coins because there's a high demand. And then anything after that is just people trading these tokens on the sidechain for Bitcoin and vice versa.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, yeah. Of course. Okay, so then the big question is value, right? That's what you want to get to, short.
Because we've decided the maximum value of this, well, because you can arbitrarily burn more Bitcoin, you can always keep that price below one Bitcoin.
It wouldn't make any sense that the sidechain coin ever becomes worth more than a Bitcoin.
Yeah, yes. But the question
because
is,
if you have a Bitcoin, you can always burn it to become a sidechain coin. But if you have a sidechain coin, you can't burn it to get a Bitcoin. So the sidechain coin just has less options than Bitcoin, so it will never be worth more than a Bitcoin.
And just to add to that, yes. And to add to that, I would say that for that reason, this is never going to be store of value. If you want to store value, use Bitcoin. This is not a token that you're going to be using for having your wealth there and maybe like some kind of privacy coin or something like a Mimblewimble where you can add privacy to the chain, but it's never going to be store of value privacy like Bitcoin is.
And more than that, this is why you're not going to have enriched altcoin founders.
That's
not going to be possible under this scenario.
Yeah.
So I would just like to call this proof of pain. But
yes.
The reason for that is... really, when you think about when you're burning a Bitcoin, then and you look at the other side, at the sidechain, and you might say, oh, well, a Bitcoin was burned, therefore this thing must be worth a Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it as a sort of a collateral, then the question is, what is on the other side of the collateral? Well, it's burned Bitcoin. So it's a bit like I give you a token that says, this is worth the price of my burnt down house. So I'm going to burn my house, and I'm going to give you a token. So I burned a house, and I'm giving you a token. But is that token really worth a house? I don't think it is.
Why would it be worth anything? I guess that's the main question, right? Like, why would this sidechain coin have any value at all if you can't exchange it for a Bitcoin?
Why would you even want a token there in the first place?
Yeah. Well, if there's nothing left on the other side, because you've just burned the whatever thing of value there was.
Yeah, so I think you can make roughly kind of the same analogy for Bitcoin, right? Where you can say like, well, you're burning all this electricity, right? And the electricity's gone. And now you have these numbers on this other chain. Like, well, what's the point? And the point is, well, Bitcoin enables something that we didn't have before, right? So I guess the argument would be, well, what is this enabling that is useful, that is worth destroying value for? And the answer is basically block space and whatever that block space you can, whatever you can use it for. So the idea is that you need some kind of native token on any chain that you're creating to pay for fees. You could theoretically, you could try to pay out of band to miners, but that gets really messy. So, you know, small tangent, theoretically possible, in practice, not really. So the question really is that block space useful for something? And that comes down to the question is, well, what is this chain going to be used for? Well, clearly it's not going to be used for storing value, like I said. So what else can you use it for? Well, the first is color coins, right? So if you want to issue tokens, you want to create all kinds of tokens for all kinds of nonsense that people are doing these days. USD Tether would be a good example of something that, you know, is pretty useful. And let's say you want to create USD Tether, and then you want to be able to trade it for Bitcoin.
But the reason USD Tether is useful is because it's guaranteed, or at least in theory, to be to be exchangeable for a dollar. But that wouldn't even be true here either. Like, there's no guarantee to be exchangeable for anything.
No, so I'm saying...
And it doesn't even have speculative value because you know for a fact that it's not going to be worth more than Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Which I would argue is the only reason altcoins have value. It's because people hope that it's going to rise in value faster than Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you've created an altcoin that doesn't have the only benefit of altcoins. So what are we doing here, Ruben?
Well, right. Let's take a step back here because the example of Tether... is something you could do without the whole PEG thing, at least initially and naively. So what one could do is you create this new sidechain, quote unquote, and this sidechain, basically, it has its own rules, and somebody with actual money issues USD Tether and says, okay, hereby declare that this 1 million Tether exists. And there is otherwise no interaction with the Bitcoin blockchain, other than creating these blocks in the mechanism you described.
Yeah.
And then the fees that you're paying, you would actually pay real quote-unquote dollar tethers to the miner, and the Bitcoin miner could then estimate, well, okay, I've gotten this many dollar tethers, so I'm willing to spend this much in Bitcoin fees to do this. So then you're not burning any Bitcoin, and then it makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, that's right. So that's entirely possible as well, and I think that's reasonable. I think it depends on the use case. And the goal that I have for this is that I want to create a chain where there is not some kind of IOU structure involved. So with USD Tether, you have the problem that this chain will stop working once the tether stops working, once the peg is broken. Mm-hmm. And depending on your use case, this may or may not be important. So maybe for USD tether, it could be fine, like what you're describing. I think that's a valid use case as well. And I would actually think that people should kind of probably pursue that. But I do think there are other use cases that are maybe not directly something like that. Like, let's say, let's talk about something silly, like, rare Pepes or CryptoKitties. Right, like let's say you want to issue CryptoKitties, rare Pepes. So these are just tokens that are not really worth anything. They become worth something. Like you got to start somewhere. You got to have a chain first with some kind of token to pay for block space, and only then can you create new tokens on that chain. And then your rare Pepe becomes worth something. And then maybe you pay the miners in rare Pepes. I don't know. That's possible.
Right.
I guess.
That's what I was thinking. You can just pay the miners in rare Pepes, and that actually puts a nice monetary value on the Pepes because you have the market somewhere where people just trade them directly, but you also have the transaction fees. And if the miners don't believe, if think the market is rigged, well, then nobody's going to be mining.
So I think it's fine if the chain transitions into that, and if that means that this token that I envision is just very few people burn the bitcoins, and you only have like 1,000 satoshis in there or something. I don't know. And that's what's being used to kind of bootstrap the chain. And then eventually people switch over to paying fees in rare Pepes. Like, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's absolutely fine. And the thing is, like, the token is just for block space. And it's just kind of a way to have a token you start with and then you pay. And it doesn't have to be worth a lot, but it'll probably be worth something. And just one person has to put one Bitcoin in, and that's going to be sufficient to kind of lubricate the whole system and pay for fees. Once you pay for fees, the miners get the token back. The token gets sold to the markets. Other people buy that token again, and they pay for fees again. And it kind of becomes this cycle, basically.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I would mention another benefit, which is right now a lot of altcoiners and altcoin founders, they claim that they're in it for the technology.
Yeah.
And the technology is going to introduce this great new possibilities in the world that we've never seen before, and they're not in it for money at all. Like, that's not why they're in it. They're in it for the technology.
Yeah.
Now, with something like this, you could very easily make the argument, look, everything you want to do, you can do here, and you can do it more securely because you're levering the security from the Bitcoin blockchain. The only downside is that you can't become rich by speculation. Hey, but you didn't care about that, right?
Yep.
So it sort of destroys that narrative. Like, there's really nothing left for them, no excuse left for them to create their own pump and dump coins.
I think you mentioned plausible deniability in an earlier podcast with the police and back comparison.
That's right. Yeah. So it's kind of like how currently, if you want to create some new chain with some new technology, you have to create some kind of token because it cannot function without it. And this kind of gives you an alternative way of doing it. And so what this does is it basically no longer gives you an excuse to create your own token. You can't just say like, I have this new chain, so I guess I'll create a new token. I'm sorry. Oh, people are speculating on, well, that wasn't my intention, but okay. You now have an alternative. So yeah, that removes your plausible deniability. Now you actually have an alternative. And the question then becomes like, why aren't you doing that? I'll give you one example. Actually, there's the Tari blockchain that Monero is using currently. You know, maybe they haven't seen this proposal yet, but they're creating basically a MerseMind chain for Monero, and they're creating yet another token on there called Tari or something. And now the question is, well, why don't you just burn some Monero and do it that way? So you remove the speculation because all they're wanting to use it for is color coins. So, you know, that would be one, you know, to give a call somebody else. I guess it would be that one.
Yes, but we just described that with the Rare Pepe example and with the USD Tether example. So either a token that's backed or something that's new and speculative, you can still speculate with it because you just don't use any native token that's related to Bitcoin. You just use the token that you issued. So is speculation really going to go away?
I guess
somehow I don't think so. Sure.
Yeah.
somehow.
Obviously, these color coins that you're creating can then be used to speculate on. But I think it probably separates the technology of the chain from the speculation, right? So now it's just going to be the token. It's like, well, you know, this is some token that in the future is going to be worth lots of money because the people behind this token are going to do great things. Blah blah blah. You know, that kind of ICO nonsense. That becomes separated from, you know, this chain is amazing because it's Turing complete and you can do smarter contracts than Bitcoin and therefore it's going to go up in value. Like that gets completely separated. And, you know, it's funny because the original claim of the Ethereum was that they were going to create a chain that was going to do all these amazing things that Bitcoin couldn't do, but it wasn't going to be a store of value. It wasn't going to be competing with Bitcoin. You know, that was not the point. The Ether was just a gas to pay for these contracts. And actually, that is what this is, and that is what Ethereum is not. So anything that doesn't require store of value doesn't require tokens. So theoretically, that should like remove value from the coins that do pretend that their token is needed.
I guess. Perhaps this could be used for Ethereum 2B.
2B, like the B version of it. I guess you could port over Ethereum and do it without a token. Yeah, that's right.
Interesting. Yeah. Is that all we've got?
I've learned something today, sure, you?
Yeah, I've definitely learned a few things today. Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening to the Van Weerdem Shores NATO Special Samson Edition.
There you go.